Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SupDoc, a show where we dive into the world of documentary film. Today I'm talking to the musician Sam Mickens about one of his favorite films, Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. In this 2014 doc by David Gregory, the South African horror genre director Stanley pitches a version of the H.G. Wells novel in the 1990s, and some huge movie stars get attached, and it is indeed a topsy-turvy journey. Huge egos, logistical perfect storms, and even witchcraft play a part in this tale of hubris, art versus commerce, and pyromaniac dogmen. And our guest is Sam Mickens, a native Angelina musician, writer, multidisciplinary artist, and now president, head of programming for Another World is Possible. Welcome to SupDoc, Sam.
Thank you, George. It's great to see you.
Yeah, it's great running into you. We had talked a while ago about this very film and then just took reconnecting. And I also wanted to bring you on to kind of explain what Another World is Possible is to our listeners, because I think it'd be a very much of interest to anyone who likes this show, people that like nonfiction filmmaking, journalism, streaming services, and comedy.
Yeah. I mean, on the film, George, I think since when I first became aware of your podcast, I think I wanted to talk about this movie. I don't know why, but this movie just really resonated when I first saw it. Several years ago, around when it first came out, I think, you know, I watched it 2 or 3 times because I just found something about it so, you know, captivating and also just very entertaining on some very unexpected base kind of levels. So I'm very excited to talk with you about it. And obviously also in the time since we might have first talked about it, a lot has happened in Richard Stanley's life.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Do you want to hear about Another World is Possible, George?
I also do want to talk about that for sure. Yeah. I was going to say the genre of this film that we're talking about, if you liked like Jodorowsky's Dune, that's another kind very, of similar yeah. thing where it's like, hey, these were all these visions for this thing that went awry and the story of something that never got made. There's also this Death of Superman Lives.
Oh, right.
Have you ever seen that? About the Nicolas Cage, Tim Burton.
The Tim Burton Superman. I never saw the doc, but I've read and heard quite a bit about that project as well with the spider.
It's this genre of like, you know, here's some sketches. Here's something that didn't happen, but it's already a fiction. It's a nonfiction film about a metafictional thing because it's a fictional film that never got made. So it's like all the basic ideas for making your fictional film. And it's a documentary about, well, it could have been this. And that's
right.
But this gets even wilder. This gets wilder than some of those, actually.
Sure. It kind of becomes its own genre, right? Because I don't think that the Richard Stanley Island of Dr. Moreau or Jodorowsky's Dune would have ever been made in any way. I mean, it's like the things they wanted to do, it's like they're cool and fascinating and stuff. But like, you know, in Jodorowsky's Dune, I don't know if you guys have done that one already, but
yeah,
like,
we did that a while ago. Yeah.
Some of the things that he claims, you know, and he's like, yeah. And then Orson Welles was going to be in it because I got him a chef and I walked up to Mick Jagger and he was going to be in it. And you're like, I don't know if all of this was really going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So they're both kind of these things about these creators who are like these very visionary, weird, you know,
cultish. Yeah.
And very super inspired about the material. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in watching the document, both of those documentaries, I think you kind of, it's clear to you that, these guys were never going to be able to make these projects anyway. You see, like one way or another, yeah. Right?
This is why I was a little bit worried about tying this into talking about Another World Is Possible. Because it's like, you are like kind of doing something that I view as semi-utopian.
It's a moonshot.
And so to explain, I know you from music. I hadn't seen you in a while. You're like, hey, I'm building a 24-hour streaming platform for like leftist political content. And I'm like, how does this all work? Like, can you talk us through kind of how you got to this from being a music guy?
Yeah, absolutely. So my wife, Su Ling, was the first person kind of working on this project and the first kind of seed and founder. And then, you know, we have kind of a skeleton crew, a founding team of folks that have been working on it now for, in some cases, you know, a year and a half. And we're very excited and we're looking to launch, later this year across multi-platforms. So basically, you know, anywhere that people stream stuff, anywhere that people watch content, that's not a regular cable television. So we'll be kind of everywhere that people find things. Over the summer we're doing, a series of kind of soft launch events. We're doing a series of events with Nina Turner, which we're very excited about. Everybody should go support Nina in her primary on August 3rd.
And you've been mixing stuff with politicians and activists and comedians.
So it's the kind of the overall vision of the channel is, as you said, left, but also just kind of independent, you know, just kind of non-corporate news, politics, and culture, basically. So a lot of the day's programming is going to be kind of political stuff, panels, talking heads, journalists, you know, news that hopefully people can come to as their regular, the people that want to just turn a channel on and see what's happening can come here as the news channel, you know, but then also doing a lot of different kinds of cultural programming, in late night and on the weekends. And we're doing stuff with Tim Heidecker and, Doug Pound and Brent Weinbach, all those kinds of folks and a bunch of other folks. We're doing some curated film programs. We're doing some, you know, other music programming. And so it's going to be kind of, you know, it is really trying to federate and consolidate a lot of really, truly disparate voices that are all kind of hopefully moving towards the same kind of broader, you know, humanist principles, which for us, you know, often is our left principles, but they're really kind of more basic and human than that, you know.
I'm sort of thinking of, you know, I'm thinking of other precedents for this type of thing. And like, Air America comes to mind.
Sure.
And I'm like, you know, I never really understood like the financial backing aspect of like something like Air America. Are you commissioning, like you're actually like going to have like a production studio for like news content and like, you know, journalists actually doing like, you know, coverage and reporting based in LA or how
it's more decentralized than that, especially at this stage. Oh, you have Daniel on your shirt.
Oh yeah.
Is that the Daniel shirt?
Yeah. I've got the Daniel Smell shirt on.
That's a good one.
At
this point it's, our goal is to be kind of a lot more decentralized than that. Mm-hmm. So, but we are producing original content with different folks in different cities and different journalists that we really like and respect. And, you know, we're working with the Gravel Institute. They're opening a new studio in New York and we'll definitely work with them on a lot of stuff. So yeah, it's a combination. At the outset, it's a combination of some original programming that we're super excited about, some, you know, movies and docs and other stuff like that. And then we are also carrying some non-exclusive stuff that people might already be aware of on YouTube or elsewhere, programs that exist, but we're putting them into the grid and kind of trying to, you know, build everyone up by juxtaposition to each other interesting ways.
Curational. Yeah, for sure. And this is launching in Labor Day. Is that like I'll be able to get it on my, I don't have Roku, but assume I had a Roku.
Or if you had a Roku Apple TV, it's going to be in September or, you know, it'll be, It'll be soon. It's coming very soon. There's just, you know, we're dealing with our distributors and dealing with all of the technology and building stuff out. And it's, you know, obviously, George, you know, we've known each other for a long time and I've slept in your apartments on pizza boxes and vice versa.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a big project for us, but we're
bootstrapping
it. Yeah. But yeah, we're really excited and everything is, you know, miraculously kind of come into place and we're looking good. So yeah, I mean, we're targeting September launch, you know,
I think the day that
October.
Yeah. The day this is out is this coming Monday. So I think your big LA event will have just happened.
Actually,
it will be streamable. Yeah.
It'll be. Yeah. Actually, our next event is airing on Monday.
It's airing on Monday. Okay. So the same day this drops. Same day this drops. You can actually go to anotherworldispossible.com and watch this program, which is yet to be recorded, but you've got musicians, you've got Brent Weinbach, you've got a few other city council people, you said?
We're very excited. It's called Another World is Possible's LA Forum. We're taping it on Saturday at a friend's clothing factory in Vernon in South LA, really awesome space. And yeah, it's kind of half town hall and political forum, and then half kind of a variety show of folks that are connected to the channel. So yeah, there's a bunch of musicians, Brent, the comedians. There's a strong man, and then yeah, we have some hosts that are working with us, and we have a group of four local candidates. So we have maybe a girl who's running for Congress, Fatima Iqbal-Zubair, who's running for State Assembly, and then Al Corrado and Brian Odega are both running for the LA City Council. So it'll be a very heady mix of stuff, but we're excited about it.
It's heartening to hear that there is a leftist bodybuilding scene or strongman scene.
It'll be interesting.
Does it go back? It goes back to the longshoreman, I imagine. Or something.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, interestingly, he's actually an advocate in a pretty white collar union space, but he's jacked. He's jacked. He's a strong man, and he can do truly remarkable feats of strength. So
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like that's what we need. We need like a left David Blaine or something.
Sure.
Not David Blaine.
Yeah.
Ugh. Maybe. Just as a side thing,
left
I know
Houdini. I'll take the left.
A left Houdini. A lot of documentary filmmakers actually listen to this program. So if they wanted to get in touch with you and pitch something for the channel, would that be something you'd be open to?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. As I said, we're doing original stuff and creating some original doc stuff, but we're also licensing a lot of things for the channel. And absolutely. People can reach me at sam@anotherworldispossible.com.
Nice.
I'll be there.
All right.
Oh, there's
a cat. Yeah, that's Sherby. He's our mascot. I live on an island of crazy animals too, Sam. Sam, I've never watched the 1996 Island of Dr. Moreau. Have you seen it?
I have. It's pretty bad. It's pretty I think what you feel in this documentary, or what this documentary would perhaps its viewpoint would be, that we lost out on a much more exciting, you know, thrillingly weird and bad or good, just weird version, you know.
An auteur. We didn't have an auteur version of this.
No, it's just nuts and bolts, get it done, shot list, Frankenheimer, yelling at people, whatever. The final version, it's actually kind of just kind of boring. I mean, there's some really, especially after watching this doc, there's some pretty fantastically spreading kind of moments from both Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer. There's some really, really like awesome bad / strange acting moments in it.
That's all I kind of, okay. So my impressions of that, I went in kind of blind in this, in that I've not seen this completed film. I had not seen any of Richard Stanley's early films. And there's some stuff that, after watching this, then I did a little Googling, and surprise, surprise, Richard Stanley, very abusive to an ex-partner who was actually his co-writer. And he had kind of come back in the scene 2 years ago.
He had just reemerged.
Yeah. He'd done Color Out of Space.
Right.
And I think his former partner, who he had been abusive to, was the co-writer on Color Out of Space. I also think David Gregory, who made this, has a producer credit on Color Out of Space. Makes sense. He got pretty close to Stanley in making this, I imagine. I did a little.
Yeah, it feels like whatever energy this documentary created probably led to his ability to reemerge and do that, right? I mean,
yeah.
I also felt like it seemed like Mandy, I don't know what exactly timeline of all this was, but it felt like the success and whatever of Mandy kind of maybe paved that way as well, right?
So, yeah. The company that made Color Out of Space made Mandy also, and it's Elijah Wood's company. And then basically, her name is Amberis Scarlett. I should double check.
Scarlett.
Scarlett Amberis. She, you know, pointed this out on Twitter, and then the production company behind Color Out of Space just like cut ties with Stanley after that. But yeah, it does color my, when I watch this, the stakes did feel like somewhat high in the sense that, like, you know, there's a lot of people's livelihoods were tied into this, but it feels grosser knowing all this stuff about Richard Stanley now.
It does. I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was interesting. I rewatched it this week because I hadn't seen it in a few years. It was interesting rewatching it. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I ever found Stanley to be like an extremely sympathetic character exactly.
Right.
But I think there was more sympathy for him probably in my first viewings. I don't know. I guess I think that this time, I mean, I still have sympathy for him as a creator in this ridiculous situation, but
yeah.
But this time I was definitely way more keyed into just how, like, some of the visual signifiers of just how crazy he is. Mm-hmm. You know, like this time I was really keying in on like his mouth, like the side of his mouth. And like when he's older, he always has like weird spittle and weird stuff. And you're like, seems like, you know, he's pretty unhinged. And it's not like that's not clear in the movie, right?
He says, that's pretty clear, yeah.
He says, my mother was a witch and she gave me this totally chaotic life and it's great or whatever. And, you know, I feel like I'm sure you've known some folks, George, who are like, I'm trying to think of exactly how to put this, but, you know, who kind of are more in this like magic, you know, in a like magic with a K and witchcraft, but like not in a like deep, meaningful way, in a more affectational kind of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like Richard is,
well,
his affect and the reality of what he says both seem kind of bad.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it borders on this thing of like kind of like, you know, we were talking about like Aleister Crowley recently. I hadn't done a lot of reading about Crowley, but this sort of like, it's libertarian in a sense, right? It's like this completely like solipsistic kind of view of like, I, whatever I want is the way things will go. And that's kind of, I think, coming through. There's that edge of the spiritual magic delving that you can get into, or just a little bit like just being purely contrarian, which I think you get a little bit of that. And I, you know what? I mean, knowing all the stuff about Stanley Al, I also like didn't totally sympathize with him, but I was like, well, he has a vision and he's being stomped on by these money people. And like, in a sense, like I still like side, there's this part of me that just sides with that part and not having, you know, in my initial viewing of this, that was like my instinct. Yeah. Or like, I'm just going to side with Fairuza Balk. That's just my general.
Fairuza Balk.
I think I thought she was a good judge of character. You know, that was kind of my go-to.
Fairuza. I mean, look, I have a lot of affection for Fairuza, from various roles and vibes of the past and
stuff.
But she also seems pretty insane in this documentary and seems like she had some kind of a really intensely embroiled relationship, creative thing with Stanley and is, is really going to bat for Stanley in this doc. Oh God. But then, yeah, but I feel like both Richard Stanley and Fairuza Balk, and I'm sure if Marlon Brando or Val Kilmer had been in this documentary, they would have done the same. Like, say so many things, like tell on themselves as just really pretty crazy people in so many ways. Right.
Yeah. I drive to Sydney. Like it's across the country.
Fairuz is like, I don't remember how I got there. I just like she was in a fugue state or something. Yeah. And she like got this random Australian crew guy to like drive her across the continent. And then she like came to, it's like, you know,
yeah.
I certainly don't stand in judgment to anybody's mental health stuff at all, but I feel like it undermines some of the narratives that they're trying to kind of cling to it sometimes, you know.
There's also like as of this moment, there is a kind of a Val Kilmer renaissance happening, and he is painted as like an arch villain in this, kind of more than Brando. Because he is, it's like he's portrayed as like being intentionally disruptive, whereas Brando is like kind of in this weird, he's lost his daughter. He's like always had a disdain for working,
everything
the time. And like Val Kilmer at this moment is like coming off Batman. But now I think we're in this reevaluating Val Kilmer thing. And like I had not heard some of these stories about like Val Kilmer, like, intentionally lighting someone's hair on fire with a lit cigarette.
And just like weird bully, like freakish bully behavior.
Yeah. He has said, I believe there's an interview he did with like, I think the New York Times Magazine or something, where he's like, I work with these people all day long. Why would I intentionally burn anyone? That was not like, it was an accident. Like that's his.
I don't really believe Val either. I mean, that's the thing though. Like I love Val too, but Val is also just another, like a legendary monster, you know?
Yeah.
Val's a monster. Brando's a monster. Richard Stanley, really, this story is just the weakest of these monsters on the island. You know?
That's a good point. Yeah, like he's like disposable, apparently. He's a completely disposable character.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild. Do you want to talk more about the plot kind of at such as it is?
Or? Sure, yeah. Cause it's like, I also have never watched any other version of Dr. Moreau. I just remember the Nelson, the guy in the crazy makeup, who's like the smallest man in the world.
Yeah.
It was just, I was like, I did not understand. I was like, Brando was like keen to like, he's like, he'll be like the star of this movie. This guy is the star of the movie.
Yeah. No, that's all I really remember. That's the thing. Watching it again now, I feel like Val Kilmer still seems like just like a total jerk monster. But Brando kind of comes off as like the coolest person in this whole scenario, you know? Because Brando kind of has the right attitude. And he's like,
I'm getting paid to be here.
My favorite thing this time watching it was the thing where like he like sits down with Fairuza Balk. Fairuza Balk's like, hey, listen, let's talk about our characters. And Marlon's like, listen, this is all nonsense. Nobody cares about any, this is all bullshit. Just, you look great. You're beautiful. Just have fun. It doesn't matter. I didn't read the script. I don't care. Like that was all, I was like, yeah, that's cool, man. I mean, Marlon Brando also definitely hurt a lot of people in a crazy monster and whatever. Yeah. But like, I would say Val Kilmer might be in more of a Brando-ish place in his life now, but I feel like at that point, Brando comes out on top. He is the only entertaining part of that final product of that movie, really. So
I feel like what Val Kilmer, so going back to Val, I have not seen the Val Kilmer, it's all self-documented stuff.
I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't come out yet, right?
I think it's in theaters.
I want to see it.
It's a batch drop. Like the story I've read about, like Val Kilmer, like it's like he should have been a character actor, but he was just too good looking and they just made him the star of everything. It's like, no, he was like a character actor the whole time. He was like doing like method, like doing Suzuki, like being like not breaking character off off camera the whole time. And it's just like, the tragedy is he was just so good looking. They had to make him the lead in everything. They had to make him Batman. He was
right. I've heard this narrative. I think he would have still been a jerk even if he was just a character actor. But I do think it's true that And just crazy. I mean, his whole thing, right? I mean, if you read that profile, right? His whole thing, where he's like,
his Christian Science,
you know, the Christian Science with his throat cancer. And he's like, he's obviously in kind of a semi Elvis place at this point mentally. Right.
I mean, yeah.
But again, he was great. And he was, I mean, the things I think that we mostly love and remember about Val Kilmer are his most weird character-y things, right? Like
commitment level. He definitely committed. You can definitely say that about Val Kilmer.
Terrible Batman, though.
I mean, that whole...
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do about these Batmen? Everyone gets a chance to play Batman. Sam, I feel like you could play Batman.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You have kind of a Robin like aesthetic, but also I think Nightwing. I could see as Nightwing.
Oh, Nightwing. Yeah, I like Nightwing. I'm too old now, but you know, you got to dye the hair black.
Hey, I'm thinking about being Bane. Let's throw to this clip where I love, like, it's true. Like Richard Stanley, a warlock, if ever there was, or an outsourcing warlock, because he employs a Sufi.
He says he's a Sufi. He's also Sufi, but he says he's a Sufi warlock of some kind.
Yeah. He is about to have this meeting with Brando, and he needs it to go well because he knows he's basically, they could replace him at any moment before shooting's even started.
Right.
So they're
already determining that he's insane and unreliable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So this is a clip of just an example of Richard Stanley's way of problem solving.
At that point in time, I was friendly with this warlock chappy in England, Dr. Edward James Featherstone, commonly known as Skip. So Skip had been shown to demonstrate his ability to fix things, to do invisible mending before. So I said, my God, Skip, you've got to help me. You've got to save my movie. At the exact same time that I went into the meeting on the other side of the world, Skip convened his coven, cut his arm, drew a sigil, and did some kind of routine to fix it and make it all right. Simultaneously, I was driven with the big old limo that was part of the contract. Brando's house was at the top of Mulholland on the left. Jack Nicholson's house is on the right. And he was extremely nice to me during the meeting. I was never really sure why he took a shine to me the way he did. It was very confusing for Newland because it was not the outcome they'd been expecting. And there's a very strong possibility that it may have been voodoo or some kind of magical interference on Skip's behalf. But the next thing I knew, Roman Polanski was out and Brando was only going to do the movie if I was on board.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Sam, yes. You had actually, since I had not even seen The Island of Dr. Moreau, there were so many things where I was just like, Rob Morrow was in this? I'm like, and my personal vision is like someone some agent somewhere is just like, a doctor, Dr. Moreau. Yeah, we got that guy. He played a doctor in Northern Exposure, Rob Morrow.
Sure.
Like it was purely like a who's on first booking of Rob.
Although Morrow. he wouldn't have been playing Moreau though. He's the like ingenue guy. I don't remember his name, but he's the young guy that comes to the island and discovers all the, you know, the Jonathan Harker.
The characters that the actors they've picked for this, firstly Bruce Willis, then just like, oh, we can't get Bruce Willis. Why not Rob Morrow? Like no similarity at all. Like it makes no sense. Yeah. And then from Rob Morrow up to David Thewlis, who you'd think would be down. You'd think Thewlis would be down to be in this. I mean, that
I know it's weird that Thewlis is not in it and they don't even acknowledge him.
Yeah.
Like it's just Rob Morrow leaves. Also Rob Morrow, I don't know what was going on in his life at the time of this they shot this documentary, but he looks like very haunted still. He looks like wrapped in this. He looks like a little like stressed out still to be talking about this, right?
Yeah. He does, and I love that they juxtapose kind of like what he says with someone else being like, he was freaking out. He's like, yeah, I felt like it was not going well, and I wanted to get out of my contract and be like, he was like crying. He wanted to come back to America.
Phone. Oh, Bob Shea, he's in this documentary, of course.
The New Line guy?
The New Line guy.
Oh,
that
man.
Insane. Lizard Bob Shea, man, he's a fascinating figure.
Is there a New Line documentary? Is there a thing about
I've mostly seen him before, and there's a really long Freddy documentary that's about the whole series, and they go through like each installment, but it's like 4 hours long or something on Netflix.
New Line like owned the Blockbuster VHS aisles like back in the day. They were the thing.
They had a real moment.
Yeah, they were the Blumhouse of their day.
And they did some great stuff. I mean, they did a lot of terrible stuff, but there's some immortal.
It's not trauma. It's like definitely like there were, you know, I didn't remember that they did Wag the Dog or anything like that, but I remember that was a sign. If you saw that New Line logo, that was a sign you're in for something.
Yeah. Ironically, also Miramax back then was kind of somewhat that, and you know.
Speaking of monsters, real God monsters. Bless. And okay, let's talk about some monster costumes. Let's talk about being an extra in Australia. You know, the fact that, okay, so many things.
The Sow Lady was one of the best parts. She was like one of the main documentary all-stars, right?
Yeah, no, she's great. Sow Lady's great. Also just like the kind of party scene, because like the like filming gets stopped so many times. The weather. Like, you know, Stanley getting replaced, like all these things. And then they're just like kind of trapped like in this like dorm. It's sort of like you've heard stories about the Munchkins on the sets of Wizard of Oz.
Sure,
like having these
just like being wasted and going.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Bacchanal. Yeah. Yeah.
I think also the have you seen that Herzog movie, Even Dwarves Started Small?
I know I should have. I have not actually seen it yet.
It's great. But there's a long time ago, I watched it with the commentary, with the Herzog commentary, and he was talking about it a lot. And it's like they shot it all in this small, kind of in a similar way to Island of Dr. Moreau, I guess. They shot it all in this really remote, like small volcanic island. Mm-hmm. And it was just this cast of all dwarves, of all like, you know, little people of various ages and whatever, the whole movie. And he said it was just like an insane fuck fest, like rager, you know, and they were all like hooking up with all these weird local fishermen. And it was just like a total, you know?
Yeah.
So, God bless them. But the people, the animal extras, the beast man, beast person extras, on Moreau. Yeah. The picture the doc shows is, and this is something that people that are like, whatever work in production might be somewhat familiar with, but to an extreme degree of just like so much waiting around for like days and weeks and weeks and like getting into the makeup every day in the assumption that they're going to shoot something, but not. So then, they're just partying in their insane beastman getups, just like drinking, smoking weed. You know, the Sow Lady talks about like she was just partying, and that Nelson, the smallest man alive, was like always propositioning her. And it just, you know, seems like quite a hang if you were there for those 6 months or whatever.
Yeah, I've been an extra, and it's like the costuming nowhere near the level of this. But it is completely waiting around. I wasn't even getting put up in a hotel or anything, but like, I guess because of the locations, they kind of had to have people like, sure. I just imagine like this going to work. It's just like, you know, those like old Warner Brothers cartoons, like, you know, the dog and the cat, like checking in, like clocking in, like, oh
yeah,
literally a dog, man. Just like checking in.
Yeah. And then of course, I mean, I don't know if this is jumping ahead, but one of the most incredible aspects of this whole story.
Yes.
Is what Richard does after he's let go from the picture.
Yeah, yeah. It really was like, oh, this is good storytelling, because there was like a trail off and then he just enters back in.
Yeah, the third act.
Yeah, I got to give credit to... I got to say, like, you're not the first person that's really told me I have to watch this. Like, also, like, Dana Gould really wanted to do this, too. And it's just like, it really takes, like, a good amount of turns. Like in the beginning, I was kind of like, I don't think I actually want to see Richard Stanley's version of Violent Dr. Moreau based on some of his like comic depictions of everything.
Oh, yeah, that's
his storyboarding. I mean, yeah, his storyboarding.
Yeah, it seems very comic, he's very, very focused on beast person childbirth. Like it's a real like it's really focused on it. There's like so much concept art, and like they shot a scene, deleted scene and stuff. It seems like there's a lot of Richard's psyche that probably would have come out in unpleasant ways.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if he had completed this film.
I mean, like, do you think, okay, so what do you think, like, Richard Stanley's, what is his fatal flaw, that he's just too weird to deal with Hollywood, or he got saddled with these huge budgets and huge stars and like he couldn't, you know, just make like a small budget version of this? Like, do you think, like, the fatal, on top of like apparently him being kind of a monster in reality?
Right. I mean, I feel a little bit underqualified to discuss some of this, just because I also have not seen Richard Stanley. Like, I'm not like a Stanley head. This is my whole thing with Richard Stanley, really, is this documentary. So I haven't seen Hardware or Dust Devil, right? Those early South African ones, which are supposed to be cool and very low budget, but which is just to say, I don't know what his vision actually looks like when he does it, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's basically like, I feel like he was trying to, again, Herzog, it's like he was trying to do like some insane Herzog type movie, like Fitzcarraldo type movie, but with like a totally normal Hollywood system behind him and all these massive actors, which is just like, they're never going to let you do that, you know? I mean, because what are the examples where Hollywood did or even continued when things like spiral out of control? Like, it's like Heaven's Gate or whatever, where it's like these famous, massive flops or whatever, but you know, I think it's just he wanted to do something way weirder than that amount of money would ever accept.
He wanted to make like a sort of a budget film, but like the film sort of, that's kind of the film's argument, right? This is like the documentary's argument, is like he should have just been left alone to make something with like
probably, you know, at the level of like Giamatti, the Color Out of something. Space,
yeah, right,
or something,
yeah. Oh, yeah, like getting someone, a Cage type person of that moment, right? Like, that's the argument. Yeah. Like the Hollywood, this is a very anti the Hollywood system film.
Sure. And fair enough. Like, that, as you said, that part of it is easy to sympathize with, right? Mm-hmm. That part of it makes Richard a little bit more of an appealing protagonist or whatever in the doc.
He makes him an underdog in this scenario.
He's an underdog. Sure, yeah. But, yeah.
And literally an underdog later, because
yes,
like, okay, this is you still should watch this, and we're gonna
spoiler
just
warning.
Talk about what's gonna happen. Like, right, he's banned from the set. He's like, they paid me my fee to go away. And
well, in fact, they get him a plane ticket out of Australia, yeah. But he like skips the flight.
Yeah.
Like the guy, there's like. One of those, all those like crew members are so cool too. But like, one of those dudes was supposed to like make sure, like physically, that he got on the plane. And he thought he had. And then Richard disappeared for a period of weeks or months or whatever.
Yeah. And then he's sort of rediscovered by this, all the extras are kind of all the beasts. Also, by the way, the guy who teaches them how to move like an animal, great. Like he does the howler monkey sound.
He's got a bit of a Guffman energy in some of those scenes. Yeah,
that guy rolls too.
He's cool.
As does Didgeridoo guy.
Yeah, the Didgeridoo guy.
It's like there is a faction of this that is like literally like I don't know the plot of the. It's like the beast people are like, you know, subservient to Moreau and his daughter, right? On the island. So it's like all the extras are kind of like living this out as well. Like there's sort of this subservient lower class.
Yeah, they're like barely human.
Yeah.
Just like smoking all day and like insane hot pig makeup. Like, yeah. You know.
And so like they hear tale of this guy in the outback like muttering to himself about how Hollywood destroyed him or whatever. And they're like, is that Richard? So then they find him. And then this is the part.
The Sal lady says he went troppo.
is that like just like going
troppo? It's like, I don't know. It's like he just went nuts in the spirit of the jungle. It's like the same kind of like Colonel Kurtz, right? They talk a lot about Kurtz and Brando and how H.G. Wells related and Conrad.
He's a Stanley. Like the character Kurtz is based on his like great grandfather or something like that.
Also dark and maybe, you know, probably some epigenetic darkness in the Stanley line, I would guess.
Some colonial, shit.
Again, I don't stand in judgment of that, but
yeah.
I would also be curious. I don't know. I don't really know where Richard is on, you know, race, frankly. I mean, I don't know. I hate to generalize, but he's a South African of a certain age whose like great grandfather was like the Colonel Kurtz from Heart of Darkness. And who knows?
There's a lot there. There's a lot to dig into.
Who knows? But anyway, So Richard has gone fully feral. He's just living out in the jungle and like, I assume trying to do weird plant drugs and
licking
whatever,
toads, can,
and whatever's going on.
Yeah.
And then, he's rediscovered by the extras because now the extras, like they've sprawled out. They're like monster makeup, beach party has just continued and sprawled out so much that they're like living along the river and stuff. And so, he just wanders up. And re-enters their ranks.
Yeah, and then they're like smuggling him onto set, and this is like technically like he has like a restraining order against him being on the set.
Right.
I love this line. I'm just gonna throw it at this clip, like where like he has infiltrated the set, and let's just play that.
He got changed in the van, so no one sort of saw him, and then we all got our sort of like costumes on, these latex beast masks and everything. And then we sort of like, I remember we sat there and he's like, you know, he smoked one big fat joint for like, you know, good luck and away he went and then sort of like emerged into the people.
It got so hot when we were working. So I was trying to give them breaks as often as I could. And they would pull the head back and drink some water. And there was this guy, one of them, that was never doing it. I kept watching him. And he would never take his head off. And I thought, well, that guy's nuts. You know, I was starting to think, well, he's going to just die.
Out of 300 extras in this tent, like Richard's the only one who hasn't taken his mask off.
He was the bulldog man. And he did this great job of jumping around and doing this weird stuff. And I went to him and I said, no, that was really great. Thank you. I really enjoyed watching you. It was a nice job. And he said, oh, thank you. And he had a completely different accent than anybody else. And then I started to wonder.
And I think once that rumor started that Richard Stanley was in the background, that I think that just grew into sort of stories about Richard Stanley then wanting to sabotage the shoot.
The moment that is kind of brilliant and like crystallizes this really great moment and for the doc or whatever, right, is when he's like, you know, he's like, and then I realized like I had completed a full arc from Moreau to the Beast Man. Like he was like, I was the creator and the director of this whole thing. And now I'm just a lowly Beast Man extra sweating under a dog mask.
Yeah.
And he's like, has this weird, like psychic realization. It's like, it's intense. It's trapped in
your own creation. That is genuinely beyond, like, it's not like Yoderowski showing up on David Lynch's set or anything like that.
Right. Which would have been sick if Yudorowski had like gotten under a bunch of crazy makeup and shown up on the set of David Lynch's Dune. That would have been cool.
Exactly.
Cool,
like, oh, he was too. A sandworm. Yeah, he was the sandworm.
Yeah, he was the sandworm.
Yeah. Oh man, are you? And like, I think that like, I'm not a big horror guy either. I think sure. David Gregory has made. I was doing a little reading. He's done other films about horror films, and that seems to. And he's a horror film guy. And he comes out of this horror film world. So I think like there's some stuff about this doc that feel like, you know, like little like the recreations of all the witchcraft and things like that. They feel a little like budget, a little like janky. Sure. But I mean, I think he did a pretty good job of hooking us into this thing and like sympathizing with this kind of monstrous dude.
Yeah.
It's just like a battle of bad egos, really, between like Val Kilmer. And
yeah, but it's like an operatic. Yeah. I mean, these are like some majorly bad egos, like bad, like crazy movie stars, right? Like it doesn't get much more extreme than a Marlon Brando in that area, right?
Yeah. But all the kind of like the Hollywood exec people, it's kind of funny how those lines get drawn too. Like some people are like, I believed in him. Some people are like, nah, there was the moment he was just like, I wanted four sugars. And I'm like, this guy's a nut. I'm like, come on. What the fuck does that even
That's mean? Bob Shea. Yeah, that was funny too. Cause that's like also just the most contrarian, like old Hollywood bastard thing where you're like, what?
Two sugars like, top. So you're out of this business.
Yeah. He was like, I don't know. As soon as he asked for three or four sugars, I was like, this guy's goofy. This isn't going to work out, you know?
Like, he asked for stevia, and I was just like, you're done. You're done in this town.
Very odd.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean,
are you a genre guy?
I think it's just a really... The doc itself, obviously, is, pretty kind of bare bones and stuff, but I feel like the people that he got to talk and the actual stories are just so wild and so compelling.
I don't think you have to be like a genre fan to like get something out of watching this.
I wouldn't think so.
Like, because it's just like, we love to see a messy, like, you know, situation, like someone who's just like, I think hubris is kind of the key to this whole thing. Right. Like, and that is the theme of, I think Wells' story.
Right. I mean, that's how the documentary kind of tries to play it, right? Yeah. And that's like why I feel like that moment of Richard saying I had completed the arc from Moreau to the dog man or whatever is like, you know, because obviously the content, the subject they were all dealing with, even though Brando didn't read the script or whatever, was mirrored a lot in the behavior of some of these figures of Richard and of, you know, some of the other ones.
It's, like the anarchy, the kind of Lord of the Flies elements, the kind of, I guess, I don't know.
James Woods. We didn't even talk about another actor that was in the mix.
Oh, if only David Thewlis had been replaced with James. James Woods was going to be the James Kilmer.
James Woods was supposed to be Val's part. Kilmer.
Yeah, yeah.
And Val was supposed to be the young guy part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it had been Woods, Brando, Val, I feel like this movie would be even better, right? I mean, if you had James Woods on that set, just beyond.
For sure. Just a different level of... Of all sorts.
You're truly getting into some like Lovecraftian horror at that point.
Also, like Lovecraft. Like, I'm just like, another problematic person. Like, color out of space.
Just and like, Joseph Conrad, of course. I mean, and Heart of Darkness itself, which, you know, it's a good book, but it's pretty racist.
I'm just thinking also, I'm like, if it's your crowd listening to this, like, we have to address all these things.
Oh, absolutely.
Like the colonial elements
absolutely.
Of all of this stuff.
Absolutely. I don't in any way endorse the character or actions of Richard Stanley's ancestor, Colonel Kurtz, Richard Stanley,
or even Francis Ford Coppola, even, or Sophia Coppola, or like, or the winery. Or weirdly, Val Kilmer and Coppola. There's this weird. They made a movie together. I've never seen it. And then like Dan Deacon was involved. And so there's this video. Actually, there's video of it. I think I talked about this before, but there's a Dan Deacon like Future Islands show at like Pear Space. And like Val Kilmer is there, as he was hanging out with Dan Deacon. He bought pizzas for all these people at Paraspace, and he kind of starts emceeing the show. Like in character, like he's a character, like
which character though? That's like, what's, like is he Mark Twain?
No, he's not Mark Twain. He's like
because his Twain is that's a.
I think he's like saying that he's either a motivational speaker or he is came from like a multi-level marketing thing.
He's doing a bit.
He's doing a bit.
Val's going back to his improv days at Juilliard. It makes me feel
like there is a posse, like you see like posse Val, right? There's a posse core Val Kilmer. There and like look, in that mix of people, it would have to be a PosiCorp Val Kilmer.
Sure.
And I guess like being a Christian Scientist is being optimistic. I mean, like I was wondering about how much anti-vaccine. I mean, like, do Christian Scientists cannot believe in vaccines, right? That seems like part of it. You wouldn't do vaccines.
I would just let it
take over.
There may be different derivations of Christian Science that embrace different aspects. But yeah, I don't think so. I think the
essence of it is you would not believe in vaccines. And
yeah, I would think.
Yeah. But yeah, like I can't picture really a PosiCorp Stanley. I get what I want. That's basically the positive. The happy Richard Stanley is just getting what you want. And then just having wide eyes and like glaring into a camera and being like, the demigods deemed it so, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know Richard Stanley. I think a lot of crazy people and crazy creative people and people that are like, you know, have some schizophrenia or severe bipolar or whatever Richard Stanley might be dealing with, you know, I think they do have fun and good and charismatic and appealing times, and they have monstrous times. Right. So I'm sure there's a fun Richard Stanley that people liked at some points. Some of the people in this, I mean, Firuza liked him.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah.
Fucking loves him, man.
Yeah, I'll ruin my career for this guy.
Yeah, she was ready to just like destroy her career for Richard Stanley's vision or whatever, which is like, I don't know. So there's got to be something there.
Yeah,
there's got to be something appealing about him in some ways.
You know, I feel like that's a guy who like could have been in comics also. It seems like that's Jaroski kind of took that comics turn. It seems like a place where you can just be. It seems like he really should have just been doing comics. That's kind of my sense from how into the storyboarding he was and stuff.
Just a lot of splash pages of extreme childbirth.
I'm trying to think like of an animal that I'd be okay with. Like, okay, have you seen it? Do they start out as animals or do they start out as people or are they genetic?
No. They're all genetic modifications where the doctor has created, you know, in a test tube or whatever.
Okay,
the thing they're all animals that have been given human qualities to different, including Firuza, who's like secretly a panther lady or whatever. They're all animals that have been genetically modified to be given some or a lot of human characteristics. They're all, you know, mm-hmm. genetic experiments. That's the Dr. Moreau thing.
Yeah. And then there's some like rules, right? There's some rules like, is it just like, don't, is it like Animal? Is that, I'm thinking of Animal Farm.
You're thinking of Animal Farm.
Yeah. I'm definitely thinking of Animal Farm.
Animal Farm's got rules. Fight Club has rules.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's, there might, I think there
don't
are
kill,
some, like,
don't kill, you know, Marlon Brando. I think is the number one rule that they break.
I haven't read the book or seen any of the adaptations in a long time, but I think there is some stuff about like the laws, like the natural laws, or what they have their own kind of, you know, the whole thing is it's like, he's a new God and a new creator and a new Garden of Eden hypothetically, but it's all monstrous and warped, but it's like, you know, he's trying to create a new and better society, right? That's like in Richard Stanley, right? In all that concept art, that's why he's saying the guy, his vision of Moreau, which is funny again, because with Apocalypse Now, they like had this whole vision of Kurtz, and then Brando just shows up super fat and bald, and they're like, oh, okay, I guess we'll do it this way, you know. And then with this one, I think he had this whole vision, right? Because all the drawings, he's very like Jesus like, or he looks like the, what's his name, the father, Source family, you know.
Oh yeah, yo.
He's just like giant flowing beard, long hair, and like a new age guru kind of energy, which is obviously not what Marlon Brando with the Buto makeup and Smallest Man Alive and the weird, you know.
I mean, but again, it's like, should have been a more entertaining shit show. Really, it sounds like it's not like the completed product. It should have been.
Yeah. And as I said, the best parts, I think, it's been a while, but I remember the best and most entertaining and stimulating parts of the final product all being the stuff that Marlon Brando threw in literally just to fuck with people. Right. Cause that's what's clear in the doc is like, Brando's just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, two of my kids have killed themselves or killed each other. Oh. And I'm just like, you know, Richard, you know, I can't have sex with Richard Pryor anymore. It's like, you know, he's like, he's been through so much. He's like, so crazy at this point.
Yeah.
He's like that. And he's just at such a point in his career, clearly, that like he can just purely fuck with everybody, fuck with the whole thing. Yeah. But I guess, you know, as some kind of testament to some part of Marlon Brando's genius, him just fucking with people is better than all of the stuff that everybody else created on purpose.
Right.
Like the scenes where it's like him and Nelson, like he's playing piano and Nelson's playing like a little piano. Like those are the coolest, weirdest things in the movie are just the Brando, like,
yeah,
you know,
I'm only here for 2 weeks. I gotta get this done.
Yeah.
Now I hate to like tie it. I love to tie it back in. So
please.
As someone who's also trying to create a new world, another world is like possible.
Dr. Moreau.
Like
Dr. Another
Moreau.
World is possible. Like, the island of like, Dr. Moreau.
Right. So there should have just been more progressive policies on the island.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that the channel or my personal vision of a better world involves beast people.
Test tubes and creating these. These
no beasts,
armed security guards, and like the hierarchy, just a new god hierarchy. We're not going to have that in another world as possible.
No,
it's not going to be.
There's no
Buto makeup. Like we'll see Sam and Kevin.
I've worn Buto makeup more times than I can remember, but.
It's the only acceptable way to go. You can't go the other way. It's the only acceptable way to go because you cannot go the other way.
No, yeah, I would say another world is possible. There's no Kurtz or Moreau figure in the channel's projected future goals.
H.G. Wells, not a utopian, a dystopian. But like, Sam, thank you for bringing this batshit movie. This is just a batshit story.
Smashing a didgeridoo over somebody's head, batshit crazy.
Yeah. We really Frankenheimered in here and try to make sense of this all. Again, let's promote, like, also you have music up on Bandcamp. You have like some music stuff as well. You can check out Sam Micken's Bandcamp. And let's talk about again, Another World is Possible. It's going to be on demand and a streaming channel on
it'll be a live channel
or is cable in the works?
No, it's all cord cutter platforms.
Okay.
Right. So again, it's all the any streaming platform. Roku, yeah. Apple TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
News content, documentary, nonfiction, entertainment.
Yeah. Comedy, music
programmer. You're the programmer. And like, if you've got a documentary and you want to be on this new thing, get it, Sam.
In this one area, and I want to be very clear, George, I don't want these words to be misconstrued. In this very one specific area, yes, I am like the Dr. Moreau of this
generation. You're going to be
otherwise
hybridizing some. You are hybridizing, like you're taking all these disparate elements and trying to make them live together.
Sure. Another world is possible. You can go to anotherworldispossible.com. On most socials, it's AWIP TV. YouTube.com/anotherworldispossible. You can see the event we did last week with Nina Turner and a bunch of other incredible people.
Today drops the new one.
Yeah. You can see the LA Forum with all of these incredible people and the local candidates. So, yeah.
Twitch? Or is Twitch a whole other thing? You're doing Twitch.
Come to Twitch.
Come to the Twitch as well. All right. Thanks so much, Sam Mickens, and good luck with everything. I'll be following along.
And thank you, George.
I'll be in the dog mask in the background of your life, baby.
Okay. Well, take it off once in a while. Have some water. You can't live that way.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you, George.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com, recapping reality since 2015. Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville. Our associate producer is Nick Kulsis. Please donate to the show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast. If you want to help us in other ways, please share the show with a friend. Join the Doc Talk and check out our hot takes, pictures, and videos on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We're SupDoc Podcast on all of those platforms. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can find Paco and George's comedy gigs, when those are happening again, on the About Us page on the site. And SupDoc is by doc fans for doc fans. So if you want to advertise, got a film or opinions you want to share, just hit us up. We'd love to hear from you and what you're docking out on. Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.